What's up and welcome to the Active Amputee Podcast. Everything people with a limb difference need to live an active and exciting lifestyle. I'm Bjorn Eser, the founder of and shaker and maker behind the Active Amputee. And you're listening to episode number 29. Episode number 29 is an interview with Enoch Glidden and how to develop a can-do attitude, something to challenge yourself and make sure you reach your goals. As you will notice, we had some problems with the internet connection. And in addition to that, I blundered while putting the settings in my computer, so the whole interview was recorded with just one sound file, not ideal, but I hope you enjoy the content anyway and are not too bothered about the rather mediocre sound quality. That's a blunder on my side, I'm really sorry about that. Today, I have the pleasure of welcoming Enoch Glidden from the US. Enoch, welcome. It's great having you on the show.
Oh, I'm glad to finally be able to join you. It's been an awesome time being able to get to know you over Instagram. We finally get to speak in person, sort of.
Person, sort of, yeah. I hope one day we actually manage to meet as in real person, not via Zoom. That would be awesome. I don't say that very often, Eero, but you've been an inspiration to my trying to get active in the outdoors for quite a long time. I mean, when I say long time, I'm a latecomer to the whole social media circus. So we're probably talking about 3 or 4 years. But for me, that is a long time on social media platforms. You know, you caught my eye when you climbed one of the classic big wall routes in Yosemite a couple of years back. And you caught my eye because you did that without actually using your legs, which I think climbing a big wall in Yosemite is an amazing accomplishment in itself. But actually doing that without using your legs sounds insane to me. And I mean that in admiration. I don't mean that in any negative way. You know, tell us a bit more about your background and how is it you are not able to use your legs, but how are you so active anyway?
Well, I was born with spina bifida, and that's a birth defect of the spine where there was a hole in my back and my spine grew through it and pinched off my spinal cord. So that left me unable to move my legs. And growing up in a small town in northern Maine, I lived in the woods. So I was always outside, always exploring around my house and always trying to just learn more about the world, I think, through exploration. And I think that's really what has driven me my whole life, is just being able to explore and learn from that exploration. So when I was little, sometimes I would go out in the woods in my wheelchair by myself and just see how far I could get. And sometimes it didn't work out to the best, but I would get stuck or either turn around or get out of my wheelchair and crawl and pull my wheelchair and just push myself and challenge myself. I think that's another thing that's always driven me, is challenge. I like to be challenged. I like to prove that I can do things. And if someone tells me that I can't, I'm probably going to. So that's usually what prompts me to try things, is just someone telling me I can't. Later on in life, I met my phys ed teacher in high school, or junior high, actually, Bob Dyer, and he's the one that really started pushing me to try more and more things. He got me into wheelchair racing and basketball and skiing and all kinds of other sports, and he made me join the other kids in phys ed class and made sure I was always a part of everything. So that taught me that I could really do anything. Is that I just had to find a way. And yeah, that's really what he instilled in me, was finding a way.
I think that's great what you say, having this a supportive, encouraging environment, which if there are real limitations where people say, yes, there are things where we just have to be realistic, but very often these limitations are very few. And as you said, if we break them down into what are the limitations, how do we overcome them? But yeah, otherwise just saying, come on, there's no need for you not to be part of what we're doing as kids, as young people in school, in sports teams. Just join us and we make sure we do everything we can that you actually enjoy it the same way we do. And I think that's so important.
So I speak publicly about the phrase, how can I? And sometimes I'll hear people say, I can't. And I tell them that's actually not true. You can't do it the way you're thinking, but you can do it another way. And that's what I really want people to get from my speaking, is that when they think they can't do something, it's because they're trying to do it the way someone else did it. They're not trying to do it the way they can do it. And that's really what I think holds people back, if they have some sort of limitation, because they're not thinking about, well, it's my experience that I want to have. They're thinking about someone else's experience, how they want to try to duplicate that experience. But we all have our own experience. No one has the exact same experience doing anything.
Yeah, so true.
So we all need to just focus on what we can do and then find a way to make that work to our advantage.
I mean, just listening to what you say right now and kind of encouraging people and probably also assisting people in this, in a shifting mindset, getting away from this, okay, yeah, I can't do it, or I'm, or pitting themselves or thinking of all these limitations, all these obstacles. How do we get people, or how do you get people to actually think in a different way? And not just in that very evening when you speak to them and they're encouraged and leave the event and think, well, actually, that was all nonsense. I'm not good. But we actually encourage people for sustainable mind shift, where they say, no, actually, I need to look at the world around me differently. I need to understand myself in these adventures, small or big, differently, and see, how does it make sense to me? How do I enjoy it? And how, as you said, is it my experience? How do we encourage people to actually engage in this journey or this roller coaster ride, whatever it might be?
In the intro, you mentioned that I had climbed El Capitan. And that's really one of the big example that I use. Obviously, that's what I speak about. I tell people, most people will use their legs and arms to get up El Capitan. I use just my arms. But what if someone couldn't use their legs or arms? They could still get up El Capitan. They could take a helicopter. They could get pulled up. They could get carried up. They could take a trail from the backside to get up. There are multiple ways for everyone to do anything. You just have to find the way that works for you.
When I was still a bit more active in climbing, I mean, the last, I don't know, 2 years, I've hardly climbed anything, not even indoors. But a couple of years ago, when I was engaged in a paraclimbing series in the UK, there was one guy, double below amputee, and also having lost part of his arm in a winter mountaineering accident as a young adult. And he was such a down-to-earth bloke. I mean, he had mountaineering experiences before he lost his limbs, but he also said, well, afterwards, obviously, I had to overcome kind of the traumatic experiences and really readjusting with life in general. But afterwards, it was breaking down the things I wanted to do into such small parts until I have an idea on how to tackle the individual parts, and then putting it back together again. And this putting it back together again might follow completely different logic than what other people would do. But he was an amazing climber, and said, no, for me, it was really breaking it down and saying, okay, what does it mean not being able to use my feet in the normal way, not being able to use my hand and the lower arm below the elbow in the old way I did it earlier? It's such an encouraging thing, because breaking things down into smaller, manageable chunks, or as someone said, it's all figure outable. I think that's such a nice slogan, and not just as a kind of a buzzword and then you do something differently and don't live by it, but I actually think this, no, in the end, it's all figure outable. You can break it down, as you said, then how does it work for me?
Everyone can use that method for anything. It doesn't have to be people with disabilities, but anyone could use a method. Like when I speak to kids, I use the example of riding a bicycle, because most kids have learned to ride a bicycle. So they can relate to that. And I tell them, well, you didn't just get on a bicycle and just start riding. You had a parent help you, or a friend or a teacher. You had training wheels. And then the training wheels came off and you fell over, but you got back up. And then the various steps along the way that led them to success are all those little parts that they put together to get to the end goal. And they can use that method for anything, even I like to tell them, if you struggle in math, break down why you're struggling in math and then figure out how to fix what's making you struggle, and you can succeed in math or any other issue you may be having in your life.
Coming back to what you said about, very often you use your example of you having climbed a big wall route in El Capitan. For the non-climbers among the audience, which is probably the majority, I mean, El Capitan is, what, 3,000 feet roughly?
Yeah, the route I did was about 2,000, but the nose is about 3,300.
Yeah. So for people in Europe, so we're talking about 700 to 1,000 meter granite wall, which climbers with all their limbs functioning and whoever decent experience in climbing would take several days to get up there. So they would spend two or three nights in the wall on portal ledges. So even for, let's say, really people who have a track record in big wall climbing, this is probably one of the lifetime experiences.
Yeah.
How did you come up with that idea? And how did you then actually go about, as you said, figure out what does it mean if I want to climb it, not being able to use my legs and having to spend, I don't know, three, four, five nights in the wall?
Yeah, it was a 5-night or 5-day journey. But really, it started almost 4 years before that. I grew up with a kid in Patton, Maine, where I come from. His name was Nick Hall, and we spent most of our childhoods together, going over to each other's houses, and we were really good friends. And later on in life, he became a rescue ranger at Mount Rainier. And unfortunately, he lost his life during a rescue and fell. So that day I went to Facebook and started looking at all his pictures, and climbing and adventure had taken him to some amazing places. And I wanted to see those places for myself. So I decided to try to figure it out and come up with a plan to be able to see, get up Mount Rainier, which I haven't done yet, but I'm still working on it. That led me to do a Google search, and I found Paradox Sports, an organization out of Colorado that does adaptive climbing for people of all abilities. I went to their Gunks trip that fall, and I really loved it. I just fell in love with climbing. It was this ultimate challenge, and the people are just a group of people who are all in to help you achieve goals, and they're all helpful, and they really were the community I'd been looking for my entire life, really. So that led me to meet a bunch of people that weekend, and then I realized I wanted to do something bigger because we were practicing on some really short climbs, maybe 40-50 feet, and I decided that I wanted to go a lot bigger. So before I did El Capitan, we went to North Conway in New Hampshire with a few friends, and Nate McKenzie, a guy that I met through Paradox Sports, and he helped me climb a route on the Theodore Ledge in North Conway. And after that, I knew I really wanted to do big stuff, because I don't know, I guess I like that all day challenge of climbing and pushing myself and knowing that the only way I'm going to get up that rock is by myself. And so that led me to talking to another friend, Danica Gilbert, who wanted to write a grant to do something. And I was going to go to Alaska to go skiing, but the grant was going to pay out after that. So she came up with the idea to climb El Capitan. And so I said, well, I said yes, but in my head, I really was thinking that might be out of my league. So that led to calling some other friends. Sean O'Neill, who actually has climbed El Capitan three times with his brother Timmy, happened to live about an hour from me. And he's also a wheelchair user. So he offered to train me. And I went to his house as many days as I possibly could for the next year and just did laps in a tree on a rope. At least 10 laps a day, 300 to 400 feet every day, just doing pull-ups. And so that got me ready to go try El Capitan. And the first time I went was in 2015. And I lived in the valley for about 5 weeks, getting to know all the people there and realized there were some things I did not know that I needed to know. So we did Washington Column instead that year. And we just did about 800 feet, which was big enough to get an idea of what I needed to know to climb El Cap. And so I went home and I trained for another year, but I also learned the things and practiced the things that I realized I needed to know before I tried to live on a wall for 5 days. One of those things was, how do I use the bathroom? I hadn't even practiced that or figured it out. There was just no way I was going to be able to live 5 days without figuring that out.
Very true.
So there was a bunch of things I definitely had to learn, but Sean got me through it and he helped me figure it out. And I went back and had the best 5 days I think I've ever had in my entire life. It was an amazing experience. And working with Christian Cattell and Craig Murderlach, and for 5 days, just it was a really awesome experience that really brought us close together. But there was also 12 other people that helped me pull that off. If people watch the movie, they'll see a big group of people in the beginning. It took that many people to carry me just to the base.
Yeah.
So it was a huge, huge thing.
I will try that. I put a link to the video on in the show notes somewhere. So, yeah. And I strongly encourage people to really watch that video. It is amazing. But as you said, it's this combination of your willpower and your training and your commitment and your passion for it, but a team that also thinks, wow, that is great. Let's chip in wherever we can. I mean, as you said, in carrying you to the base, putting up the fixed ropes, assisting you.
Yeah.
But in terms of for the non-climbers, you said with your mate, you practiced basically pull-ups all day long up the trees in northern Maine or somewhere.
Yep.
But now translating that to the climbing, how do we have to picture that?
So the first day we had three pitches fixed. So we could bust out the first three and get up above the ground a ways. And then after that, Christian would climb ahead of me to the next anchor, tie off a rope, and then I would just climb up to that anchor. And then he would do all the hauling, and Craig was filming and cleaning the route behind him. And then we just kept doing that for 5 days. Yeah. And we also had to keep a portal edge open so that at each anchor I could lay down and get off my bottom so that I didn't get a pressure sore. At each anchor, I would lay down and wait for Christian to climb the next pitch and set the next rope. That's how we did it. It was about 4,000 pull-ups in 5 days.
I always consider myself not too bad in pull-ups. If I could pull off 100 pull-ups a day, spread out over the whole day, I thought that was an amazing feat. But
and that's what I tell people when they say, wow, 4,000 pull-ups. I say, well, you only have to do one pull-up 4,000 times.
True that, again. Break it down into manageable chunks. It sounds amazing. And as I said, I really encourage anyone in the audience who is just barely interested in climbing or anything which encourages and people to try out something which might be out of their league. I think that is just the 20 minutes they should watch. You know, you mentioned Paradox Sports earlier, and I know, yes, you have been in contact with them before, and they were probably the ones which got you hooked on climbing, and where you said you found a group of people where you had the feeling there was a strong bond right away. Their outlook on life resonated with what you wanted to do, and it was a bit like a sounding board for your ideas, the normal weekend ones as well as the more crazy ones. But I know you're also involved with them now after your climb. Can you tell us a bit more about Paradox Sports and why you think they're such an amazing organization?
Yeah, I became an ambassador for Paradox after I did El Capitan, and because I wanted to spread the word and get more people involved and get more people to experience this amazing challenge and this amazing sport. It gets you out into the world and gets you, I mean, there's no way you're going to see that perspective any other way. And that's really why I climb, is the challenge, but also the view. I mean, you're never going to see that view from El Capitan any other way.
True,
everything looks perfect from up there. It's like everything is supposed to be where it is. And that's really the one thing I'll remember the most, is being sitting at the top and looking down and seeing that view. But Paradox for me is a group of people who are excited and driven to help people experience what it's like to overcome a challenge and what it's like to accomplish big things. And that's really what I want people to take from it, is that feeling of, wow, I did this, and wow, I can do this. Because I think a lot of people see themselves as not being able to do certain things, but really we can all do basically anything a certain way, like I said before. Yeah. And Paradox gives people those tools and those techniques to pull off anything.
I only know Paradox Sports from kind of the on and off chat with people like you and others who work with Paradox Sports. But for me, they come across as really, as you said, providing a safe space. I mean, physically safe as well as emotionally safe, that actually people can say, I step out of my comfort zone. And at the same time, you have a team which over years really probably built up the most experienced group of people who have an idea on what does it mean to teach, to encourage, to support people on this journey, people with all kinds of disabilities, limitations, to try something which might be a bit scary in the beginning. From indoor climbing to ice climbing to, as you said, big wall climbing, or trying the shorter routes on granite or sandstone or whatever you mention it. Having life hacks and ideas for all kinds of things, from putting crampons on stubbies to, I don't know, putting an ice axe on a socket to, as you said earlier, creating a harness where you sit on and then combining it with some pulley system so that people who actually can't use their lower limbs can do something, and having the experience of doing that safely. So not kind of the, oh, let's just give it a try and see
what happens. Yeah, that's really what it's about. They combine their experience and knowledge with the ability to try things. They have this knowledge of what will work, but they also have a knowledge that maybe we could try something else that will work better, but do it in a safe and manageable way so that people have the best experience possible and still accomplish their goals. I think that's what I really found that first weekend was, well, let's try this, but let's try it this way so that we know it's going to work and we know it's going to be safe. And I think that's really what it was about. I felt comfortable and I felt I could accomplish things with their help. And that's really what happened.
And I think it can be such a confidence booster for people. I mean, from what you said, you've probably always been a bit of a daredevil and say, I just try out with my wheelchair out in the woods and see how far I get and these things. But for others, especially for people who probably had life-changing accidents or events where from one day to the next they had to readjust to things and probably took a big knock on their confidence, suddenly not being able to walk or see or use the arms. And I think then it's so important to, on the one hand, really push the boundaries, but also encouraging people and supporting people to actually, as you said, reach those goals and saying, well, actually, that's great. I can do that. And I think it ripples off in all fields in life then. Kind of from, I don't know, the next job interview where you're with more confidence to re-engaging in your local sports club or in local politics, you name it. I think it's such a great thing.
Yeah, you mentioned people who are newly injured. And I think that might be the difference for me is I grew up this way. So it's all I know. I didn't have to relearn anything.
Yeah,
I just learned it exactly the way I am. And I think that definitely helped me. I didn't have to all of a sudden changed my entire life. And I think that would definitely make it much more difficult, but it's still the same process, still learning the same process. And I think that's what I can help people figure out, is that it's still just a process and it's still possible.
A nice, simple, but powerful message, I think. Look at the process and it's possible, just break it down. Yeah.
Yeah.
Enoch, let's move away from, let's say, the past and your current experiences and involvement with Paradox Sports. If you look ahead, 2022 just started. Anything exciting coming up? Anything relating to disability issues, inclusion, making people aware of what's possible? Anything which you think is worth sharing?
In the last year, I became involved with Maine Trail Finder, website based here in Maine. And I have been hiking trails and checking for accessibility. We finally got some snow here in Maine yesterday. So I'm going to start cross-country skiing and checking cross-country trails for accessibility that way. And soon I'll be talking with them and we'll be planning the next year of experiences and hiking and possibly waterway accessibility and any other type of outdoor accessible experiences that we can come up with. We're going to be talking about all that. And we may even have a weekend to teach people who build trails about accessibility and let them experience what it's like to be in a wheelchair and have to hike a trail that's not accessible or and then hike one that is. And so hopefully I'll be doing a lot of work in that area this year. As far as climbing, I've been practicing with a friend and hopefully get some climbing in this year, but I'm not sure about major ones this year because it's expensive. So it's going to take a lot of money and a lot of fundraising to get Mount Rainier pulled off, but hopefully that will come soon too. But in the meantime, I'm going to be doing a lot of hiking and working on that project.
Yeah. For people who want to learn more about the Maine Trail Finder, what's it called, where can they find more information, especially when they're interested in accessibility, outdoor activity issues?
Yeah, if you just either go to my website or go to Maine Trail Finder, and if you go to the trails page, there's an accessible adventure icon, and you click that, and it'll give you all the accessible trails in Maine that I've found and the ones that have been submitted by other land trusts and other people.
Great. I also going to make sure I put that in the show notes. I think it's really good spreading the word about these initiatives.
No, I just remembered I'm working on another project with some guys out of Utah who were trying to come up with an accessible trail rating system.
Okay. So
right now, people rate trails based on people who can walk.
Yeah.
But we're trying to come up with a universal system that gives information to everyone, so they can make their own decisions based on what the trail description is and what the rating is. Not necessarily that it's accessible, but is it doable?
Well, that sounds great and sounds challenging. Very, very cool.
It's a big undertaking.
Takes a bit of systemic thinking. Great. That sounds good. Keep me in the loop on that one. Interesting. Yeah, unfortunately, Germany, in terms of accessibility on our outdoor activities, I think we still have a long way to go. I mean, as you know, I'm mainly busy in the English-speaking countries, and I think I know my way around there in terms of the landscape, the charities, the support organizations. And I must say, now that I'm contemplating about also offering a German language service in terms of podcasts, in terms of blog, there's not a lot around, which on the one hand might be nice because it's a niche, but that's from the provider side, from my side. If I look from people who actually need the information, there's a lot of room for improvement, to put it nicely, but it's just another word for that's partly really shoddy and should be different.
right. The trails that I've been doing, I only pick easy trails, and it's amazing the vast difference in easy trails. The descriptions say one thing, but the trails are much different in some cases. Yeah. So it would be really, I'm hoping to really refine descriptions and refine the information so that it's correct and it's people can really make a decision based on what they see in the information.
Yeah, cool. No, that will be that. That's definitely something I will try to follow you on these developments. Enoch. Our time is almost up. It's always a pleasure talking with you. And I know we joked a couple of years ago that maybe one day we managed to link up as in face-to-face. I know we had that talk before Corona, and now all this looks like distant past.
Yeah.
But who knows, maybe one day. If you ever make it to Europe, give me a call.
I definitely want to.
We'll see if we, do a bit of kayaking or climbing or...
Yeah, that would be amazing.
Be great.
Yeah.
You know, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's really great chatting with you and exciting things you're working on. Thank you so much.
Oh, well, thank you for the opportunity. I really appreciate it. And I can't wait to get to know you even more and maybe figure out how to get over there someday.
One day we'll meet. Enoch, you have a great day. I'm pretty sure we probably link up soonish again. Until then, all the best.
All right. Well, thank you.
I hope you enjoyed the show. Make sure to hit the subscribe button so you don't miss any of the new episodes. And I would really appreciate it if you leave me a rating on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you want to learn more about The Active Amputee, make sure to head over to www.theactiveamputee.org, where you find hundreds of articles from amputees for amputees. Articles filled with inspiration, information, and encouragement to be active and live a rewarding life. I see you all again for the next episode. Until then, all the best. This is Bjorn from The Active Amputee.